My name is Franz Töttling. I'm from the Vienna University of Economics and Business. My talk will be on Michael Polanyi, who is Karl's younger brother and Kari's uncle. Michael is nowadays known for his philosophy of science and his theory of knowledge, but he started out his academic career in physical chemistry. But before I go into this, I want to send my best wishes to Kari Polanyi, who celebrates her remarkable 100th birthday on June 14th. Michael Polanyi is in academic circles equally well known as Karl Polanyi nowadays, although in rather different communities. Whereas Karl has been in the social sciences and in political economy, Michael Polanyi was until his 50s anchored in the natural sciences and then shifted more and more to the social sciences and to the philosophy of science. He's famous in particular for his theory of knowledge and its emergence that he regards as a highly personal and socially embedded process. This includes his concept of tacit knowledge, that is, undocumented or implicit knowledge, such as experiences and routines. It constitutes one of the foundations of today's theories of knowledge, knowledge society and innovation, as we will point out later. In the following, I will briefly deal with some historical facts and the context of his life, and then move on to his theory of knowledge and its relevance from today's perspective. At the end, I will come back to his relationship to his elder brother, Karl. Michael Polanyi was born as the fifth child of a Jewish family in Budapest in 1891. In his lifetime, he was engaged in different studies. In Budapest, he started with medical studies that he finished in 1913, the year before the First World War broke out. There he served as a medical officer. He then took up studies in chemistry at the Technische Hochschule Karlsruhe and earned his PhD in physical chemistry in Budapest in 1919. In Karlsruhe, he met his wife, Magda Elisabeth Kemeny, who was also a chemist, and with whom he had two sons. His younger son, John, became a famous chemist just like him, and he was even awarded the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1986. In 1920, Michael Polanyi moved to Berlin, where he was appointed as head of department at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for fiber chemistry. Here he elaborated the foundations of fiber diffraction analysis and conducted research on the deformation of crystals. Not least due to the increasing persecution of Jews in Nazi Germany, he accepted a chair in physical chemistry at the University of Manchester in 1933. During the 1940s, Michael Polanyi increasingly turned his attention to the social sciences and the philosophy, developing a particular interest in the phenomenon of scientific knowledge, its nature and its emergence. He regarded the power of independent thought and the motive of searching for truth as the foundation of academic studies. As he argued in his book, entitled Science, Faith and Society, published in 1946. In 1948, the University of Manchester created a new chair in social science for him to continue with his studies. He was exempted from all teaching, which allowed him to write his major philosophical work, Personal Knowledge, published in 1958. He acted also as a senior research fellow at Merton College in Oxford and held a well-received lecture series in the United States during the 1960s, including one at Yale University. A revised version of these lectures was published under the title The Tacit Dimension in 1966. A few more essays and publications to this topic followed until the mid-1970s. Michael Polanyi then died in the year 1976 in England. As I have mentioned already, he is known nowadays for his theory of personal knowledge. In the preface to this major book, he describes the aim as an inquiry into the nature and justification of scientific knowledge. He emphasized in particular the significance of a pre-scientific tacit knowledge that every person holds. A large part of his work tries to make this personal knowledge visible. These efforts soon led him outside of the strictly scientific field into other areas of thought, such as politics, arts, and religion. Michael Polanyi was convinced that scientific truth can only be found in an integrated and coherent overall picture, not in its individual parts. He regarded science as an extension of perception, as an experience-based integration of parts to whole entities that reveal a before hidden reality. Polanyi's philosophy of science and of knowledge has in fact very high relevance for social sciences nowadays. The following are some major conclusions drawn from his work. The first, as already mentioned, is that a person's or scientist's pre-existing knowledge, that is their personal knowledge, influences the scientific process. That means that everything such a person already knows about a certain problem area has an influence on their basic understanding of it and on the trajectory of the scientific process. Second, only part of the knowledge can be codified, that is, recorded or documented. This component is also referred to as codified or explicit knowledge. Another part always remains tacit, as an implicit or experience-based knowledge of a person involved. He described this with the phrase, "We know more than we can tell or express in words." The boundaries between codified and tacit knowledge, however, are not rigid, but can be shifted by deliberate efforts. Experience-based tacit knowledge, for example, may be codified by writing a report, a manual, or a scientific article, or by implementing a new technique. Conversely, codified or explicit knowledge can be transformed into implicit knowledge through a process of routinization, as we call it, that turns tacit knowledge into social habits and routines. About 40 years later, in the year 1995, the Japanese researchers Nonaka and Takeuchi called this continuous shift from explicit to implicit and back spiral of knowledge that constantly expands the knowledge level of an organization and the society. Explicit and implicit knowledge can be acquired in very different ways. The former, explicit, may be acquired by reading scientific literature and academic journals, or nowadays through internet research and the statistical analysis of data. The implicit knowledge can be acquired in various forms of learning, such as learning by observing or monitoring, or learning by doing. It also can be accessed through personal contacts and exchange with skilled persons, such as in a relationship between apprentice and master. His ideas of tacit and codified knowledge have also spatial and geographical implications that have become significant in innovation studies and economic geography, where Michael Polanyi nowadays is frequently cited. It is argued that today's processes of research and innovation taking place at universities, research organizations, and firms draw on both local and global sources of knowledge by employing various modes of accessing these sources. Local knowledge is often tacit and tied to persons, organizations, enterprises, or in the form of a local innovation culture, to collective routines of certain regions. It can be accessed only through local contacts or direct collaboration with local actors. Such a locally bound knowledge can be found, for example, in specialized industrial regions, as well as in modern technology regions, such as Silicon Valley or Cambridge, in the form of specialized professional skills. Locally bound knowledge and related institutions contradict the often invoked thesis of a continuous and limitless globalization. This argues that thanks to modern ICT, the internet, social networks, and sophisticated transport systems, most of the knowledge today is globally mobile and accessible. In contrast to this suggestion, the discipline of economic geography today emphasizes that tacit knowledge is highly relevant and mostly immobile and rooted in certain regions. Geographical distance, therefore, is far from dead, and the earth is not flat in the sense of a level playing field, as some have suggested. Instead, it features mountains, valleys, and deserts of knowledge, and as a consequence of prosperity. I would like to conclude with a few words addressing the relationship with his older brother Karl. During the early years of their lives, that is until the 1920s, the relationship between Karl and his younger brother Michael was harmonious and caring, not least because Karl, as the elder of the siblings residing in Europe, felt responsible for the younger ones and supported them. During the 1930s, however, the two grew more distant, both intellectually and politically. The younger Michael held political and scientific worldviews that were distinct from those of Karl. Michael adopted a far more liberal view and thus a greater skepticism towards a strong state and a centralized planned economy as it developed in the Soviet Union at the time. In his scientific philosophical works too, the individual took priority over its embedding into a social community, which was the aspect Karl emphasized. On a spectrum ranging from society or Gesellschaft, understood as a collective of individuals with equal rights, to community or Gemeinschaft, understood as a coherent and culturally rooted group of human beings, Michael certainly was closer to the society end. While Karl was very critical of a market economy that was decoupled from its social embedding and responsibility, the younger Michael had more faith in the functioning of a market economy, as long as it was guided by adequate social rules and supported by policies in the sense of, for example, Keynes. That said, both brothers shared the skepticism towards and rejection of the neoclassical concept of a homo economicus. This refers to the notion of a fully informed and always rationally behaving individual who as a consumer maximizes its own benefit, while as an entrepreneur it maximizes the profit, thereby contributing to the prosperity of all. In contrast to these ideas, both brothers regarded individuals and their behavior to be shaped by their respective history, by the background and the social relationships. Correspondingly, both were ultimately socio-economists who simultaneously placed a strong focus on the dynamic side of the economy, either as an evolutionary process in the case of Michael, or as a historical process that evolves in relation to social conflicts as in the case of Karl. During the later years in life, in the 1950s, not least due to Karl's illness, the two brothers became closer once again, which found expression in a profound mutual appreciation of their respective work.